Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 283, top of the day to you, Steph.
Why, hello! Welcome back to me!
Thanks, and back to this. We've both got pop guards. Yep. Usually I give it to you.
Because I'm more of a popper.
Yeah, well, because the rule, the technique is, if you are a popper, the technique is to talk diagonally across the microphone, not directly into it. Having said that, you can still pop a bit.
Yeah, and the way we're seated, I am looking directly at you.
I mean, I could move your microphone a little bit, but anyway, it doesn't...
Pop guard's far easier, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, I still get rid of all the pops. So that they, because they sound gross when you've got headphones in or like the little earbuds.
Oh, yeah.
If someone goes, I'm going to do it now, ready? If someone goes, or I just took the, okay. And now I've taken the pop guard off. How disgusting does that sound when I say pop? And then I'm going to put it back on. Hang on. Oh, yeah. See, heard that. Ready? Pop guard.
Yeah.
I haven't touched it. I'm not doing anything in the editing here. Pop guard.
Hmm.
Big difference.
It is. At first I was like, it's just like nails on a chalkboard. You know how some people are terribly grossed out and other people are like, whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, yeah, it's not the nicest sound, but like, calm your farm. But I completely believe you after your little demonstration of the pop guard.
And when Steph said completely believe you before, there was popping during the recording, but I've edited it out. So it just sounds like someone talking. Well, it sounds like Steph talking.
But properly.
Properly. We have got a quiz and it is about actors. Surprisingly, a lot of them are of a particular era.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't... Not all of them.
Is that the theme?
No.
Okay.
It's about their names.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Anyway, we can discuss it when we get exactly why we think that's a thing, because it's a thing. I have got some very cool behind the scenes history of Top Chef. I'm not going to go.
I'm going to love this.
I'm not going to go through all of it, but I will specifically tell you what to Google to find it.
Fun.
Because it's a really cool article.
Is Ken Lee in it?
Ken Lee.
Ken Lee was a really annoying contestant in season one, and I think he lasted maybe two episodes.
Yeah, he got kicked out first.
But he's
spoilers.
Memorable.
Yeah, he really super is. You said you've got some really interesting, cool, diverse things you want to talk about that you've watched.
I'm going to label it highbrow, lowbrow.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I've got an eyelid that it's honestly been flickering, twitching for almost a week. It's driving me crazy.
Have you considered Botox?
okay. Which could lead into some things that you potentially have watched.
Potentially.
I'm sure that there's been people in things
sure
you've been
watching. I'm sure there's a little bit of Botox in there.
Give a little go. Let's get into the news first, okay? Get into the news first. So this was literally saw the headline and went, we're going to talk about it. This is from Variety, variety.com. Aubrey Plaza refuses to use streamers because they make her, quote, really angry, and she buys her films and TV series on iTunes instead.
For a moment, because it is Aubrey Plaza, I was having a little question in my head as to whether streamers were party decorations, because I could imagine her getting a little bit cranky at them.
So angry with them. God.
Just have balloons.
Annoying. Why would you do it? So does that mean that she can't watch season two of The White Lotus because it's from HBO and that's not on, you can't buy that on Apple?
So she can't watch her own
I mean, not
stuff.
That you would.
Wouldn't
I mean, she might. I don't know. She might. You'd probably go back and watch it, right? But wouldn't you feel like you've watched it, like you've done it?
Depends how much you knew of the script.
Yeah.
Was your part so disjointed from the rest of the story?
And you may not know who died and who the killer was. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Because didn't they do something funny with the ending when they filmed it? Didn't they do a complete...
did they do some decoys?
I think they did a complete decoy.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a pretty big ending.
Massive.
She said, I get really angry. This is about trying to use streamers. She said, I was trying to watch Top Chef season 20. Yes.
Oh, yes.
And she said, couldn't figure out how to effing get Hulu Plus Live. Just Hulu, I guess. She said, I give up. I can't. I just can't. So what I like to do is I go to iTunes, buy the movies that are old, or I'll go onto iTunes and I'll just be like, buy the whole Soprano series. And when my husband will be like, you literally can watch that for free on HBO Max. She's like, nah, not doing it. She buys it. I don't think she's going to do that for long. I think she's going to give in again.
I think her husband's going to be like, I'm cutting you off.
Stop buying things that we've already got.
We've already got them.
Yeah.
You tell me and I'll download it for you, love.
Or you tell me and I'll just search for it on the app that we've already got.
I'll add it to your list that comes up on top.
That's it. That's it. Oh, Aubrey, she's funny. I didn't realize she was a Luddite of sorts.
A modern day Luddite.
Exactly. That's it. Kiefer Sutherland is a man who acts and so does his father, Donald.
Yeah, just a little bit on the side.
So I wonder if he already knew Clint Eastwood before he signed up to co-star with Nicholas Hoult in a new Clint Eastwood movie.
I'm going to hazard a guess and say yes.
I reckon they'd know.
Yeah,
surely.
Family friends.
Probably.
Have a barbecue together.
Now, this is a massive one for Clint Eastwood because this is his final film that he will be directing. Mm. He's going to be retiring after this. It's called The Juror Number 2. And like I said, Kiefer Sutherland and Nicholas Hoult, like, we like it. Toni Collette?
Yes, okay. In, done.
Yeah? You're okay with it?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
she's brilliant.
Well, she's Australian.
Yeah, I know. She's Muriel.
She is Muriel.
She's only gotten better and better.
Tara?
Yeah, United States of Tara.
Yep. She's the lady that died or something in a show that we watched, or her husband died or something. Someone fell downstairs, remember, and it was based on a real story.
The Staircase?
Yeah, probably. Was it real? Was she the one that died?
I don't remember.
I mean,
what
you find out. No.
It's
pretty sure it's the husband. I'm pretty sure she is like, she gets arrested for his murder. And she's like, he just fell down the stairs. And they're like, no, you pushed him. And then, that's in the first episode. Okay. Like, that's the premise of the
thing. Did I watch this?
I don't know. You should have. It was
probably
such a thing that you would love.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Do you want to know a little bit about what Juror Number 2 is about?
Absolutely.
Not about the Toni Collette film about the husband
and
the staircase.
No, that's confused me entirely. Tell me about Juror Number 2.
I think it was, what's his name, from Pride and Prejudice?
Darcy.
Yeah. What's that?
He fell down the stairs.
I think he fell down the stairs.
What is this movie you're talking about?
No, it's a TV series. It's like HBO or something. So Aubrey's never going to see it. She'll have not watched it like you.
She'll be buying it on iTunes in 2032 when it gets put on.
The film, Juror Number 2.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
The Rural Juror is about a family man who is Nicholas Hoult, and while serving as a juror on a high-profile murder trial, he finds himself struggling with a serious moral dilemma.
Ooh.
This is, I'm quoting from the synopsis. Yeah. Is it one he could use to sway the jury verdict and potentially convict or free the wrong killer?
Why would he want to do that?
Don't know. We'll have to find out and watch the film. Or we could ask Toni Collette to just let us know what happens. She might not know yet, though. She probably doesn't have the script.
I feel annoyed by that.
We've also
synopsis.
Got to learn Toni Collette's details or whatever, and interests, and become her
Mafia
friend.
Have you watched Mafia Boss?
No.
That's Toni Collette.
Good?
No, I haven't seen it. I really want to see it. I was hoping that you would give me the down low.
No, I've been watching other things, obviously.
This is amazing conversation.
It's a good conversation. We are on fire. Would you like the final story before I start talking about Top Chef stuff?
Yeah, I've got a little story for you.
Okay. Well, do you want to do yours now?
Yeah, because mine's such rubbish, but I would really But I'd really like you to watch the trailer of it.
Okay.
So from
yes,
the original Real Housewives of New York, because remember I told you last week that those real ones got shelved and they've released a new era.
Yeah, fresh. Brand new, fresh.
Fresh, brand new. Anyway, the old ones, Countess Luann and
yes,
Sonia Morgan.
Okay.
You know them. They're legends in their own lunchtime. They have a new show coming out and it's called, I'm pretty sure it's called Welcome to Crappy Lake. Now, we might okay, pause our recording just for I a need, moment.
Because I saw like 3 seconds of it this morning, okay, but I was working and I couldn't watch it.
Because.
And I think I know what
you know what I'm going to say? Of.
Paris Hilton
and Nicole Richie. Thank you.
Simple Life.
The Simple Life. It feels exactly like not even trying to pretend that they're not being that, but there, they are.
There was a tortoiseshell kitten in it.
Oh, well. You'll have to watch it now.
Gotta watch it.
In.
The toy. Are you gonna have me watch it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna watch it now. You watch it as well. And then we'll all come back straight after this man tells us something.
You can never have enough hats, gloves, shoes, and we are the watchers, sweetie darling.
Okay. At the beginning I was like, I'm gonna love hate watch this, like it's going to be dumb. I'm going to hate it, but yeah, I'm going to enjoy it. I think I want to watch the series now.
You want to watch the whole
thing? I think I do.
Really?
Yeah, it's like The Simple Life, but they're touted to the small town that they're going to
yeah,
as celebrities, and most of those people will have never watched Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Well, that
especially the
that's
blokes.
The wrong show. They're from New York.
Oh,
so,
sorry, New York.
Yeah. No, the blokes would never have watched
They'd
it.
Never have watched
but what
it.
I find really intriguing is the people who would probably watch that would have done the same reality television progression that we would have. So they would have watched them in Housewives. But before that, they would have watched The Simple Life with yes, Nicole Richie and Paris
well,
Hilton.
That was one of the first.
That was one of the first. So it's a progression that they've moved yeah, on. So it does really make me wonder why they've gone for such a similar premise. Because everybody who would watch
no, doesn't
that
matter,
would remember.
No.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
Because reality TV may be one of the only forms of entertainment that hasn't done a proper 100% remake. They
what
just
do you mean?
They just do other series. Right, so
I'm with you. Okay.
Beverly Hills 90210. We're going to redo it. It's going to be called 90210. Yep. Degrassi Junior High. We're just going to call it Degrassi or yep, I don't even know what they called it. Movies, right? We're going to remake this. Video games. We're going to remake Resident Evil 2 but make it different but still do the same but
yep,
we're remaking it.
Yeah. But you can't because it's supposed to be real.
Reality TV shows, they don't remake it. They go, this is a new series of.
Or it's an add-on.
Yeah. I rest my case. Top Chef is a reality show.
It's a good one. It's up to 20 seasons.
Yeah. And it just does not get bad. It just doesn't get bad. So there's.
It doesn't get bad. In fact, it only surprises me that people can get better and better
because
at
it's
cooking.
It's filled with people who are at the top of their game trying to show off and test that they are the top of their game and that their skills and talents, they want to show them, they want to test them, they want to prove them.
And it's a huge prize pool. So yeah, for anybody in that industry, opening a restaurant is incredibly expensive. It's not something you can do by yourself. You need investors. And for people who are at the top of their game, are amazing, would have an amazing restaurant. They might not have the funds. This show might give it to them.
Yeah, exactly.
And even if they don't win the final prize, that every episode prizes or some of the quick fires are worth $10,000.
Some people end up winning like $30,000 to $50,000 and they don't even win Top Chef.
But imagine if you then invested that into a restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Hollywood Reporter, com is where you need to go, or you just type into Google the Top Chef oral history and it'll take you to Hollywood Reporter. It's really, really long, very long. But I'm going to read the little byline thing. It said, Padma, Tom, Gail, and other insiders reflect on how the Bravo show, which began with an 11th-hour host pivot and one massive French chef hissy fit, transcended the reality TV genre to change food media and the American restaurant landscape forever.
True.
It's very long. So what I've done is I've just cherry-picked a few from the beginning, quotes from different people.
Is that because you didn't read the whole article?
Yes, that as well. Lauren was a former Bravo president. And she said,
"President,
yes, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was a massive launch for cable, but it immediately started to decline. Mm. Not only did I have to reverse course on that slide, I couldn't let this network to be defined by just one show."
Yeah.
And then Tom Colicchio, head judge, said, "My response when offered the job was said, not interested. There were other reality shows at the time. One about a restaurant really didn't seem to go too well for that chef." Mm-hmm. They're talking about Rocco. Do you remember Rocco?
Yep.
He had a reality TV show before.
Yes.
And it was set in his restaurant. Apparently it was a flop.
Very different.
Yes, but they talk about this in this article.
Well, I guess it was a new avenue to pursue is reality in restaurants, and if it flopped with his.
Yeah. Gail, other judge, said, I'd been at Food & Wine, which is the Food & Wine magazine, for exactly 1 year when Bravo came to our publisher and pitched the partnership way, the way Project Runway had done with Elle, and the then fashion director, Nina Garcia.
Yes.
It felt like the right move for the magazine, but the question became, who was going to be the guinea pig? The guinea pig was me. She's still there.
She's still there.
There have been a few seasons where she's dipped in and out during the season. Like you'll notice she's just not there in a couple of episodes, like maybe every second episode.
But I think that was when she was having children.
Yeah, of course, getting married and all that sort of stuff. Padma.
Mm.
I had taken a meeting with Lauren, the aforementioned Bravo president, about becoming the host.
Ooh.
She said, but Bravo didn't want to do the show that I pitched. She said, by the time they decided to film this show, and they approached her, I had signed to act on in a mini series for BBC, for British television. And another Bravo, ex-Bravo person said, Lauren was emailing me saying, who's the host? And I didn't have an answer.
Mm.
So last second, Katie Lee, the host for season one, said, I hadn't really done TV before. And I got an email through my blog that said, hi, we're the producers of Project Greenlight and Project Runway, and we're doing a new food show. We'd love you to read for the host part.
Wow.
And she thought, well, it must be a phony email. Mm. And she Googled them a week later, and then she was on a plane to San Francisco.
Amazing.
And then Padma was able to do the second season. So they
it's crazy.
They got rid of Katie, brought Padma in, who was, I didn't realize, their first pick.
That's crazy.
Heaps of really interesting stuff in there. I mean, I like you made me admit I didn't finish reading at all, but I read enough to be like, oh, there's so much in here I could talk about, but I don't want to sort of have it be a Leah Reads from a Hollywood Reporter article.
I mean, the setup has been and still remains to this day fairly different to the other cooking culinary competition shows out there.
Kind of. Iron Chef's probably a close one, maybe MasterChef Professionals,
but I think that's the difference. They are top of their game, like you mentioned.
Mm.
But I think that judging panel are so diverse, but they click well together.
Yeah.
But they're not they're not cookie cutter. They're not just filled with, you know, six middle-aged men who all own restaurants and all think that they're better than everybody else, which I think could come about in the culinary world a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But you've got, it's two women and a man, and it has been for 20 seasons.
Yeah, even the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, other people have come in as guest judges
many famous people
taking Gail spots when she's not there, who are really wonderful people and wonderful judges. But I think the fact that you've got a writer, a chef, and then a real foodie, I think that's what's done it.
This was the other quote that I wanted to find. Shauna Minaprio, who was a showrunner from 2006 to 2009, so the very early ones, Shauna said, "I had just read Anthony Bourdain's book Kitchen Confidential when Dan and Jane called me, and she said the moment they mentioned the show, I was like, oh, my God, yes. The professionals Bourdain described in those kitchens, pirates or dyslexics or ex-cons, whatever he said, they didn't fit in anywhere else. And they were all so intensely creative and intensely competitive. That's amazing TV. And when you think about people like Ken Lee, you know, like those.
Yes.
They are the pirates.
Yes.
Of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even Marcel.
Oh, yeah.
The pirate. But they're intensely creative and intensely competitive.
Yep.
And we loved watching them.
Loved watching them and loved being exposed to areas that we don't know of. Yeah. And these are people top at their game, creating incredible things that sometimes you watch, you know the ingredients in it and you can't even fathom what it would taste or feel like. And then
they get the ideas within a second.
Within a second. And then other times when they're amazing professionals and they're getting like caned for too much salt.
Not enough salt.
Amazing.
It always comes down to too much or not enough salt.
Yeah. Or not following the rules.
Yes.
I think that's been a big part of Top Chef.
You've got to listen to the rules.
I think there's only one season that I can think of where there was a clear sort of favourite.
Yep.
And I don't mean favourite because they were good. I mean favourite because the judges liked them for whatever reason. And to me as a viewer, it seemed like they got unfair awards.
Mm-hmm.
But you got people who are making mistakes and failing. And they're incredible. Like they are some of the top restaurants, sous chefs, head chefs, and they're making mistakes and getting kicked out.
Yep.
Like that's mind blowing.
I know. And they're not like, oh, it's rigged. They just go, okay.
Yeah. They go, yeah, I had a bad day in the kitchen.
Because it's Top Chef.
It's Top Chef.
Yeah. Should we get into some watching suggestions? Yes.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
What you been watching?
Okay. Would you like me to start with highbrow or lowbrow?
Hi.
Oh, okay. I wasn't expecting that, but let's go there. So I mentioned it last week when you phoned me in.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got something I really, really want to talk about. This show is an Australian production. It's available on SBS or SBS On Demand, and it's called Safe Home.
Mm.
And it is nothing short of phenomenal. And if there's anything I want you to watch, not just you, Leah, but anyone listening,
I want
you to watch this show. It is critical to where we are in the world now.
Wow.
And the storytelling of it is beautiful and gripping and heart-wrenching. Anyway, it's about a young lawyer who her name is Phoebe, and she leaves a job at a quite a prominent law firm and begins working for a family violence law center as a communications person.
Right.
And she's coming in with, I guess, really only knowledge of law from a big law firm and those sort of wealthy cases, to coming into a world where we've all heard about domestic violence or family violence, but we don't have those ins and outs. We don't know how destructive it can actually be. And there's one line that they say a few times through, and they say there are two types of people in the world, the people who know and have experienced domestic violence and the people who know that it can happen
to
anybody. Mm. And you at the very beginning get a little tiny glimpse of what the ending's going to be, but the whole time through you're questioning, who is it, what's happening? Is it that person? Is it that person? And it hits you like a slap in the face.
Really?
And I don't mean that as an awful pun. I mean that
as... Oh, yeah, right. I didn't even pick up on it.
It's – you don't see it coming. and suddenly it's there and you're involved in it, and it's just shocking. And it's shocking how the law system can't protect the true victims. It's only, I think from memory, 4 episodes long. So it's not long.
Yeah.
But you
it's like
will,
a mini series.
You'll really love every minute of it. The acting in it is so raw and beautiful, and for not one second in it do you believe that they are just saying lines.
Mm.
You believe those actors are those characters.
Wow.
They've got wonderful people like Aisha Dee, who you would know from The Saddle Club and The Bold Type. There's Mabel Lee, Antonia Prebby, Virginia Gay, who you would know from a billion different shows, including All Saints.
Curly hair, right?
Yes. Mm. Please do yourself a favor and watch it. You have moments where you almost can't take a breath and moments where you're about to cry, but it is a stellar, stellar production, and kudos to SBS and Screen Australia for producing that. It's wonderful.
So you look at it and you go, nailed it. You did well.
Absolutely nailed it.
Bring in the awards.
Absolutely. Mm. You know where you see a trailer and you think, oh, yeah, it's interesting. I'll give that one a go. And then you think, I can't get enough of this, but I also can't watch another episode tonight. I can only do the one.
Yeah.
And I've never thought about things in this way before, but I'm really glad. I think the best part of it is how educational it is.
Oh, okay.
Because domestic violence is there, but we don't know those innuendos, and we don't know how minute it can be, but how destructive it can be. So it's fabulous. Safe Home.
Safe Home on demand.
SBS.
SBS on demand. I have been watching Star Wars Visions.
Ooh.
The first season I realized I hadn't gotten through, so I watched the last few episodes of that. And they're short, one-off episodes of stories that are not connected to any other Star Wars stuff.
I didn't realize they were one-offs.
Yeah, one-offs.
Interesting.
And the first season, they were done by Japanese animators and, you know, animation houses and all that sort of stuff. Anime, I should say. Very interesting the way that they brought their Japanese touch to it.
Yes.
And it really works well. Second season, they have changed it up a little bit in that they are doing different countries. So, you know, there's Spanish. I think there's some sort of South American one. I can't quite remember where exactly it's from. But it's hard. Like, you just have to study. You have to look it up and see where it's from.
Yeah.
Because it's set in Star Wars, so how would you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. One is Irish.
Mm.
And the main character is a young girl. She's, you know, a redhead.
Mm.
And there's an older guy there with her as well. And he's animated. Like, he's a comic. He doesn't look realistic. And he looks Irish. That Irish look, you know, the dark hair, very pale skin, blue eyes. That there's a certain Irish face that Irish men can have, and women, I guess. But there's an Irish male face.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, my God. If you know, you know.
Yeah.
And how did you recreate that in an animated thing? Because
an interesting concept. So interesting.
And there are flavors of things that potentially have happened in whatever country's background. Mm. There's, for example, let's talk about the Irish one. Maybe there's hints of the history of Ireland or things that have happened that end up in this in the show. Yeah, very, very cool. And I just love the fact that Star Wars allows this kind of thing, because it just opens up this universe. And at the end of almost every single episode you go, oh, well, go and make a whole series about that. Do the movie of that one, thanks.
Yes.
I'll watch it. Do the movie of that.
They're paving their way to just go, you know what, put all these ones down, we'll see which one's the most popular, and they get the green light.
And I really get annoyed when people say, oh, there's too much Star Wars. And you know what the simple answer to that is?
you don't have to watch it all.
Well, that's exactly it. That's like every type of genre. And I feel like Star Wars has actually created their own genre now.
It doesn't matter. You don't have to see any of it.
No.
The people who really are really into it, who are enjoying
exactly
these new stories told new different ways.
Yes.
We're loving it.
And you know, let them love it. I personally don't enjoy Marvel. It's not my thing. I'm not going to watch it. But I'm really happy for everybody else to go and watch it.
Because they get to watch lots of different movies and they're all connected.
Yes.
And yeah. The series as well, they all get to watch all of that. Yeah, I know. So Star Wars Visions, I will say if you have potentially not heard about it and you're like, oh, what exactly? Think that Love, Death, Robots series on Netflix. It's like that. A lot of the animation style will be completely different to the episode before.
Yes.
And obviously, like I said, a completely different story.
A bit like Black Mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a collection of short stories.
Yeah, little anthologies.
Yeah.
So thumbs up. And now can we go back to the world of reality TV show? Because you said you wanted to watch a lowbrow show. What have you watched?
I watched, like I would say, a huge percentage of the world.
Millions of people.
Millions of people. I watched the season 10 finale of Vanderpump Rules.
And
holy
really?
Moly.
Okay.
Now, this was the ultimate episode. This is where real life clashed with reality television because this episode happened after they wrapped.
Ah.
So the season had wrapped. It had stopped for a decent amount of time.
Hmm.
And Scandoval hit, where I have spoken about it before,
yes.
Where Tom Sandoval was found to have been having a 8-month relationship with his girlfriend of 9 years, best friend.
Gross.
Now, that hit only by chance, and we find out about that in the finale. It blew up. And they decided to pick cameras back up again and film.
Now, so did they only film those people or were the whole cast a part of this last episode?
The whole cast came in and out for different things, mainly conversations with them, but the whole episode was essentially about them.
I mean, no one else would – like the audience wouldn't want to know about.
Nobody else wants to know anything. I mean, the finale is airing this week. And I know a lot of the cast members, when they were called about the dates for filming their reunion, they said, I'm not coming back for the reunion if it's going to just be about this affair, Scandoval. As a viewer, I don't care about anything else.
Don't care about your
stupid
story. I want
three full reunion episodes just on Scandoval. So, look, we might have to sit through a little bit. But back to the season finale.
So hang on.
Yeah.
Do you think the reunion's going to be like, and what was going through your head 6 months into it? Did you think you had gotten away with it?
Yeah.
Or were you feeling the heat or something? And then they answer the question and they're all like, and Barry, how's your dog?
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, so after those 6 months.
And look, they probably filmed for 5 or 6 hours and they probably let people have a big conversation. You know, one person got married. She probably thought this season was going to be hers. It wasn't. And I reckon they let her talk about it, but I reckon in the edits it's going to be.
You're gone.
Yeah. So Bravo, or Peacock I should say, have announced that the day after each reunion episode is aired, they are going to release the unedited footage of that episode.
Amazing.
For each of the 3 reunion episodes. And people have gone wild. I've even seen people.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, on Australian social media asking the Australian stream services saying, I know they're doing this in America.
Oh,
are you doing it here?
Yeah, right.
And Hey You has answered saying, we've heard you. Yes, we are doing it. I think that's where we're all going to get a little bit disappointed because that's the stuff that's going to be in the raw footage is the conversation about the dog and the wedding that nobody wants to hear about because, of course, they're going to put the affair in.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to
Hilarious.
The season finale. I'm talking the first 90 seconds. They
were in?
They just started. There was no like warm up to it.
Giving
it
you like, what you want.
Bang. And in the first 90 seconds, and I know other people have mentioned it as well, I was sitting there with my jaw on the floor, just being like,
put your jaw what? On the floor if you really want more.
What? Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
And then there are some really good bits. So Sandoval is a complete and total narcissist. He's awful and has, now that we're all reflecting on who he actually is, the whole 10 seasons, we're now realizing there were red flags the whole way along.
I mean, and the fact that he's on the show.
Yeah.
First red flag.
But he's even worse. He's like a power narcissist. The best bit to me is watching him realize that everybody he meets with, all his friends that he meet with.
Good friends.
Absolutely. Rip him a new one. His best friend, who was also a bit of part of it, knew what was going on, covered for them. His reaction was, I'm getting cancelled on social media because of what you've done. We've got a bar opening up. Nobody wants to go to it. It's like, this is awesome. No one cares about you. He goes to meet with Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah.
And has what?
How many dogs does she have with her at the time?
I don't know, 75. Yeah, right. Two horses and a giraffe. She meets with a girlfriend. Welcomes the girlfriend upstairs into her personal sanctuary. I think they're sitting like in Lisa Vanderpump's bedroom. Jeez. Tom Sandoval has to go into the office downstairs, isn't offered anything. He has what you could only call as a mild panic attack, you know, hyperventilating, crying. And she just sits there and watches him.
Does she?
There's no response. And it's brilliant.
Great.
Some people were saying on social media, it's like, oh, that was really difficult to watch him cry. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. He's trying really hard. And sometimes when you're a really awful person, your world blows up. This is what you call consequences. Panic attack away, mate.
Anyway. Instead of just the introduction to the opposites and you kind of done television, it's just the introduction to the consequences.
Yeah. So it was a spectacular
season finale.
And the fact that they picked cameras back up for it, most of the time they're all sitting there with no makeup, no hair, nothing, cried. It's a really good season finale. And I wonder, though, would the season have been any good if the sprinkle breadcrumbs of this affair, because the audience already knew about it from about halfway through. We already knew about the affair. I wonder if it would have been any good. But is that what makes it a good show, is that we knew what was coming?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway.
That's going to be the peak moment of Vanderpump Rules. It's
absolutely.
It can't get
any better. And it was a really good week for me to have COVID because I was home isolating. It meant that I got to watch it as soon as it was released. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do this week when the reunion is released.
Oh.
Perhaps I'll have to catch COVID again.
I don't think it works that quickly. Oh, I don't think it does. But one can only hope,
we
right?
We can only hope.
Only hope.
Call it work and see what they say.
Didn't you do this last week?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that sounds really bad. That's terrible. I watched a show about Brooke Shields.
Oh, the doco?
Mm-hmm.
I started it.
I watched both episodes.
Did you?
Yeah. I realised that Brooke Shields is a lady who we know from one thing and we know that she did other things, and she was in like Suddenly Susan, which we didn't really watch her. But she's always been around.
Since a child.
She is the Drew Barrymore of the Brooke Shields. How the Brooke Shields is the Drew Barrymore of the Brooke Shields. No, Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, because Brooke came first. Surely.
I think. Yes, definitely, because I think Blue Lagoon was very early 80s, and I think it came before E.T. Now, Drew Barrymore is in this doco talking about her and being young and whatnot. Brooke Shields' childhood friend, Laura Linney.
I know.
Laura Linney.
Yeah.
Not that one. Because I always have to think about her last name or Laura Dern's last name, like either. But it's not Laura Dern's, Laura Linney, her friend. And what an interesting relationship she had with the mother. Her mother was her manager. Her mother was like the boss of her career. But at home, her mother was an alcoholic, so Brooke was kind of looking after her.
Crazy.
But it was very much the early 80s and the 80s because things that she was doing, not doing, jobs that she had.
Yes.
Were a little bit icky.
You know? The one in the brothel.
The one in the brothel where she played like this child in a brothel or something. And Blue Lagoon, which is all about like two kids who end up being marooned on a deserted tropical island. And then they grow up there. They go through puberty there together and they don't really know anything because no one taught them because they were kids when they ended up there. And then they just have to kind of, figure out what these feelings are.
Yes.
Well, they don't even think about them. It's just like, I didn't understand.
Bodily functions.
Bodily functions, all that sort of thing. So that was very interesting, and finding out about, you know, her and her life, and she's just so together, and she, to her, it was all just work.
Yes.
It was work. And, you know, then she ended up going to uni or college or whatever, and she was so famous by the time she got to university, so famous that everybody there was like, oh, we can't talk to her. She's too famous. And she's like, but
I don't have any friends.
I have any friends.
It was a very isolating upbringing and childhood. And I found it quite, you said it before, but quite icky because the whole beginning they were talking about her modeling career and how she just as this baby and this child had this look. And
America loved that look.
They just loved her.
They just thought she was the most beautiful child in the world and teenager.
And I couldn't help but I was looking at her going, she's so beautiful.
This child.
No wonder she's stunning. And I thought, don't think like that because that was the problem in the first place.
But she, yes, definitely. But kind of what I felt watching this documentary was that Brooke Shields 100% owns it. She in by no means takes any of this on as a victim.
No.
It's just part of her upbringing. And she's really together.
Really together.
There's a chat towards the end of the second part of this doco. It's on Disney Plus. It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Also Disney Plus as well. But Aubrey, you have to wait. Where she's sitting down with her husband, who's they've been married for years. Like Andre Agassi is a very distant memory.
Yes.
And they're daughters who are late teenagers, maybe early 20s. Yeah. And the daughters are like, oh, no, we haven't watched any of your younger stuff. And she's like, why not? And they're like, oh, no, I don't like the story that's being told or the depiction or whatever. And then one of them said, oh, no, I did watch something. It might have been Blue Lagoon, but it was something.
Yeah.
And she's like, you didn't tell me that you watched that. How did you feel? And they were talking about how their perspective now in 2023 is so different to the perspective back then that watching it is quite, they either won't watch it because it's just too much or it's a little bit icky.
Yes.
Or very icky.
Yes.
Or totally icky.
Yes. Very much so.
You know, it's interesting. So I rewatched Blue Lagoon as well.
Did you?
Yeah, which was annoying because I had to Aubrey Plaza it because it wasn't on any streaming service. So I just rented it.
Did Aubrey pay for it?
Like, that would be kind of a bad idea. I'll invoice her. It's fine. Yeah. We watched that movie a lot growing up.
I watched it a lot growing up and I remember watching it again possibly past teenage.
Yeah.
And I had one of those thoughts, like her daughters, where I went, I used to love this, but as a kid, I loved the idyllic nature of swimming in clear blue waters every day and just running around on the sand. And watching it as an older teen adult, I was like, oh, there's so many things wrong with this. that it's uncomfortable.
But what she said in the documentary about it I thought was really interesting. She said it was a movie that at the time parents would let their children or teenagers go and watch because it dealt with puberty, the changing of being a kid into a teenager, into an adult, not knowing how to deal, like I said, deal with all of these changes. And then watching it with that quote in my head made it less icky.
Yes. Yes.
And that's probably why Brooke doesn't see it as icky, because she sees it as that.
That's yeah, that's really true, because it was an innocent education.
It was totally innocent.
And
I mean, the characters. But also, it didn't come around in the 80s. It's like a story from the 1900s.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's super old, which is why it's set then.
Yeah. It is a lovely. I don't know if lovely is the correct adjective, but it was a great movie and peaceful. Is that the right?
Peaceful.
You know what I mean? Like
a flare of danger.
Yes.
With, you know, the potential cannibals or whatever on the other side of the island.
Yeah.
Which, let's be honest, those potential cannibals.
They knew their kids were there.
Of course they knew the kids were there. The kids were there for like 5 years. They just left them alone.
Longer. Yeah.
I mean, that's not implied or anything.
Yes.
But obviously they knew.
Yes.
And, you know, the whole scariness about, you know, changes within each other's bodies and whatnot. That's a little scary too.
And I think that it was more scary, rightly so, for Brooke's character, for the woman, because there was so much going on there. I mean, she gave birth on an island.
She didn't even know
what was going on.
Yeah, she didn't know she had a baby. No idea.
She would have thought she was dying.
Yeah. Richard was very worried about her.
Rightly so.
I think we need to get into this quiz because I was very impressed with myself when I came up with it.
Yeah, okay.
This quiz is called Three Name Names. These actors all have three names. I'm going to describe maybe something they've been in or just say what they've been in, and you have to tell me the actor's name. The obvious answer is the actor has three names.
Okay.
The voice of Darth Vader.
James Earl Jones.
Good job. Is Buffy.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Colm in New York Star.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na, ch-ch.
Oh, my God. Jason Priestley, Luke Perry. Luke Perry. Brenda Walsh was, no.
Boy.
Oh, Brian Austin Green.
Yes.
I thought you were going to do someone. Oh, maybe this will come up. I'll say it later.
Okay.
Maybe it's a question.
Stifler. You might need a bit of help with this one. Sean. All first names. Sean.
Sean. Give me initials.
Sean. W-S.
W-S. Sean.
Prince.
What?
It is a prince.
Sean
you a clue.
William.
Used to live next door to us.
Matthew. What?
Yeah, go on.
Scott.
Sean,
I would never,
William Scott.
No, never ever have gotten that by myself, but thank you for all the help.
Halloween, Freaky Friday, Knives Out.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
She had to be first.
Yeah.
You know, you start strong, James Earl Jones, and you finish with Jamie Lee Curtis. But all of them in
Hang on, is that it?
That's it.
Okay, I've got one for you
then. Okay, go
on. This is what I was thinking.
Go on.
Okay. A married Monica.
Like Courtney Thornton.
No.
Courtney Thornton Smith, though. Courtney.
Yep.
Cox Arquette.
Yes!
I wasn't quite sure which order it was. I wasn't sure if it was Courtney or
Kate.
Yep.
Remember they changed the episode where all of them, so it was like Jennifer Aniston, Arquette.
They were all Arquettes, that's right. I remember that. But apart from James L. Jones.
Yes.
And Jamie Lee Curtis. And actually, now that I think about it, Sarah Jessica Parker. But Sarah Michelle Gellar, Brian Austin Green, Sean William Scott. There was that one in Charmed, like the middle sister. She's got three, like Mary.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Jennifer Love Hewitt. Like all of these people from Charmed, around that time.
Oh, it was their calling card. It was their thing to set them apart.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you've got Madonna and Beyonce who are just like, nah, yeah. I'm right, mate.
Doesn't Madonna have like seven names?
Yeah.
So yeah. Just go for one.
Hey, here's a fun thing you can do, which if you haven't done before, just pop onto Picasso's Wikipedia and just have a read through his full name.
Oh.
You'll be there a while, but geez, it's fun. It's really interesting. I've had so much fun talking about the things and listening to the stuff, and now I need to go and eat.
Yeah.
Do you need to eat?
Yeah, I'm a bit peckish.
Lamb ribs tonight.
Get out of town.
No, I need to get into
Naomi
the kitchen.
Naomi Watts and Tom Cruise. Remember?
Yeah. And it was funny because Nicole ended up. And with they were, you know, Naomi and Fruit. Yeah.
Her friends.
On that note, Stephanie, thank you very much.
I do have three names. I've got a middle name.